May it please the Court, I'm Adam Schwartz for the plaintiffs. This appeal is about a special pot of government money that cannot be enjoyed by people who do not believe in God.
But Mr. Schwartz, there, you know, I go back to this thing I keep harping on. I mean, there are these other statutes, and the briefs of your opponents and the amicus briefs are replete with examples of other groups who don't appear to have the same sort of element of religious commitment, let's say. I want to be careful not to overstate it, or to understate it, that the Boy Scouts have. And so if, in fact, the reason the government is doing it has nothing to do with the Boy Scouts' religious affiliation, if, in fact, O'Hare against Andrus is still good law, what difference does it make that the Boy Scouts may have, you know, a commitment to some sort of God, any God, I take it, you know, the God of the Jews, the God of the Muslims or whatever?
The difference is between neutral aid available to all groups and special aid available only to the religious Boy Scouts.
Well, and why isn't this exactly neutral aid, even though it doesn't happen to be 2554, but if under some other statute, the Girl Scouts or the Special Olympics or someone else could get that sort of assistance, or for that matter, the Catholic Church, why isn't it neutral?
No other statute authorizes the Pentagon to provide comparable aid to any other group.
But does it need that special authorization?
Well, it doesn't have the authorization, and there's no record evidence that it ever has done. The the aid from the Pentagon to the Boy Scouts for the Jamboree, 89% of the spending, some $6.5 million the most recent Jamboree, was to purchase civilian goods, like cookie dough, like pediatric medical supplies, like commercial vehicles, and to hire temporary civilian labor.
But that would have been exactly the same if it had been an organization identical to the Boy Scouts in every respect except for the religious affiliation point. In other words, you know, paramilitary young men, you know, training in citizenship, patriotism, et cetera, et cetera.
What we have in this case is a statute that authorizes that extraordinary aid only to one group. The Pentagon, there's no record evidence, has ever rendered that extraordinary aid to any other group. If one looks at, for example, Kirios Joel, what the Supreme Court holds is that when a statute on a non-neutral basis gives extraordinary aid to one group, which is religious in orientation, the gerrymandered village of Kirios Joel, it does not matter that no one else has tried to obtain that species of aid from the government and been denied. It is enough that the aid on the face of the statute is non-neutral. The Supreme Court majority in Kirios Joel gives the example of a statute authorizing busing services only for the parents of Christian children. We don't have to wait until the non-Christian parents try to get busing services. The statute on its face is...
But if there were a statute that said, you know, under statute code section 1, there's busing for parochial school children. In statute code section 2, there's busing for children in other non-parochial private schools. And statute number 3 says there's busing for children in the public schools. Why isn't that the relevant universe? Why shouldn't we look at all three of those and say, you know, at the end of the day, every child gets bused who needs that service?
If this court was to look at all the statutes, busing is busing is busing. It's the same kind of aid. When the dust settles, every parent, whether they're at a secular or religious or a private or public school, is getting the exact same kind of aid, busing. No one except for the Boy Scout can get this extraordinary aid. Again, the spending of massive quantities of taxpayer dollars to purchase civilian goods, to hire civilian labor in a manner that does not implicate military personnel at all. The other statutes that the government has pointed to, if we're going to talk about the other statutes, for example, the Innovative Readiness Training Program, or IRT, 10 U.S.C. 2012. The defendants in the summary judgment stage below submitted a declaration of the director of the IRT program, whose name is Kevin Bushy. This can be found in the defendants' separate appellate appendix beginning at page 68. What he says, three pages into his declaration, this is the leader of the IRT program, is that any materials required for an IRT project must be supplied by the civil entity receiving the project. So if the government's going to build me a bridge to teach their combat engineers to build bridges, I have to pay for the bricks and the mortar. And they're not paying some contractors to come in and build my bridge. They're sending their own personnel in to build my bridge. If the government cannot pay someone to build my bridge and cannot buy me my bricks and mortar under the IRT statute, under the defendant's own definitive statement of the limits of that program, they certainly cannot use the IRT statute to purchase materials for the Catholic Church at their hypothetical 40,000 kid rally. They certainly cannot hire contractors to provide services to the Catholic Church. So this IRT statute is far narrower in comparison to the extraordinary and unlimited aid from the Pentagon to the Boy Scouts under the Jamboree statute.
Well, that does sound, in a sense, though, like a difference in degree rather than kind. In the Mass on the Mall case, the National Park Service and so on, the Interior Department, were providing a chain-link fence, portable water fountains, electric current, and so on, $100,000 to $150,000, an additional $28,450. I mean, these were expenditures of money. They were real, and we haven't taken it down to the last nickel in Establishment Clause cases.
Respectfully, it's simply a difference in kind between the kind of government services that are provided to any group who wants to hold a large public event, whether it's...
Why? I mean, you say that, but I mean, you're saying it doesn't make that true.
Well, for one thing, the government is not buying food and beverage and medicinal supplies to render over to the private group. The government is not paying private contractors to build roads, to build sewer systems, to build electrical systems.
But the government argues that many of those are permanent improvements to the base, that it's happy to do at the time the Jamboree calls for it, but there it stays at the base thereafter, and that the Boy Scouts themselves pay them significant money.
A very great portion of this is transient. For example, the $500,000 spent by the Pentagon to hire civilian contractors to put up the scouts' tents and later to take those tents down. This was not a permanent improvement enjoyed by the Pentagon.
Right, but many of the examples you just gave are permanent improvements.
Many of them are specially designed for the use of a tent city of 40,000 civilians engaged in a summer camp activity. And while there might be a handful of synergies to soldiers who are staying there, it's an entirely different a different kind of makeup.
But the government also makes the argument, which frankly, after the last couple of years, seems to me have some traction, that the ability to set up such a tent city on very short notice, maybe post-Katrina or post-Rita or any number of other disasters that have happened, is an ability we want to have. And the military is one of the few institutions in the country that can do that kind of thing.
Let's assume that the Pentagon wants to learn how to deal with refugee problems at tent cities by providing such services for gatherings of civilians. A perfectly acceptable way for the government to obtain that benefit is to have a neutral statute authorizing the Pentagon to build a tent city for anybody that asks. But that is not the statute on the books. The statute on the books is non-neutral. The scenario that would be acceptable would be a neutral program. The government has declared a winner without holding a race. There simply is no reason to assume that there aren't other civilian groups who bring together gatherings of kids who wouldn't equally enjoy the and want the assistance from the Pentagon in assisting with essentially putting on a summer camp experience for...
But who has the burden to show that? I mean, I don't remember anything in this record that you presented indicating that some other group approached the military for something comparable in scale and were turned down.
There is nothing in the record to that effect, but the holding in Kiryas Joel, again, is we don't need to wait, in the example of the busing, for the non-Christian parents to come forward and say, we want busing too. It is enough if the program is non-neutral on its face in favoring a religious group to the exclusion of other groups.
Right, if that's the case. I wonder if you could talk about standing, because it seems to me your case, as your opponent was suggesting, is quite a few steps beyond the Freedom from Religion against Chow decision, which had to do with direct financial support to faith-based organizations, grants of money.
The argument of the defendant is that taxpayer standing should be limited to cash grant programs or, in the case of Chow, spending that is not a cash grant program but with a nexus to a cash grant program.
And also, I think there's another important argument that the district judge, I want you to address the two aspects of it, is their argument that when a provision of the Constitution other than the taxing and spending clause underlies this, here the property clause and the military clause, then we were outside the realm of FLAS to begin with.
As to the former argument, the very reasoning of Chao contradicts the government's position. What the court states in Chao is that there is, quote, so much, close quote, the government could do to violate the constitutional ban on religious spending beyond a cash grant program. And they give the hypothetical of the Department of Homeland Security, in order to discourage Islamic terrorism in America, building a mosque and hiring an imam to pray in that mosque as being an example of a case where there would be taxpayer standing. That is utterly not a spending program or a cash grant program. And in the same way, we would have standing in this case. As to
But it's an expenditure of funds directly for religious purposes. And the fact is, the expenditure of funds on this record is for purposes of military readiness and other things that would be exactly the same, just as the other example in Chao. The president gets up there and says, I think everybody should go to church on Sunday. It's the same thing as if the president gets up there and says, I think everyone should take a two-week holiday every year. It's, you know, we pay the president's salary. Has he used the money? Yes. You know, but we had other examples in that opinion as well.
I think that the there are two elements of Establishment Clause. One is the purpose and one is the effects. We are not challenging we are not alleging a religious purpose. What matters is the religious effect, which exists when the government gives special treatment to a religious group over a secular group that cannot be enjoyed by people who don't believe in God. So the intent of the government here is not the issue. It's the effect of excluding the non-believers. As to the other standing argument that you've raised, there are a number of cases, including the Second Circuit decision in Katkoff and a series of District Court of D.C. cases, such as Newdow, which hold where the challenged governmental action of spending could be authorized by both the spending clause and some other clause. There is nonetheless taxpayer standing. And this follows.
How do you distinguish Valley Forge, though? I mean, why is it okay then to give government property to an avowedly religious institution?
The issue, the FLAS doctrine is when the government is spending taxpayer funds. In Valley Forge, there was no spending of taxpayer funds.
Isn't that completely artificial, though? I mean, if you want to engage in a barter economy, you're still paying. It's just that you haven't converted the good into money first and then turned the dollars over. I don't see that that really makes any sense economically.
Well, whether or not the distinction between spending of taxpayer funds versus other governmental action is a sensical distinction. It is the one drawn by the Supreme Court in FLAST.
I think you've overstated it, counsel. It's not any time the government spends money. Otherwise, there would be taxpayer standing all the time. It's a congressional appropriation, a statute that constitutes an exercise of taxing and spending power, in other words, an appropriations bill.
Yes, Your Honor, we completely agree with that description.
And that's not what this is. This is an authorization by Congress to the military, which to do what the military was doing for many, many years.
Well, we don't know
it's not an appropriations bill.
We don't know what the military was doing before the enactment of the Jamboree statute. There is very fragmentary evidence in this record. We don't know how much money was being spent. We don't know if the exact same kind of aid was going to other civilian groups. We don't know whether or not they were purchasing civilian goods and hiring civilian labor as they're doing now. So the record, what the Pentagon and Congress what the Pentagon was doing before the enactment of the Jamboree statute doesn't support the Boy Scouts here.
It's your burden to prove standing.
It is our burden to prove standing, and we've proven it because we have taxpayers. We are challenging two congressional spending actions, the authorization to spend the fund and the appropriation of money over to the Pentagon, which in turn spends the money in this way.
The statute on its face is not a spending statute.
The statute on its face authorizes expenditures of funds in the same way the statute that would, for example, authorize the construction of a mosque or a statute that would authorize the provision of busing services.
It authorizes logistical support and the lending of equipment and so forth.
It authorizes services, personnel services, and logistical support, and those terms have been interpreted by the Pentagon to authorize it to spend millions of taxpayer dollars to purchase civilian goods and to hire civilian labor. The Supreme Court decision in FLAST is instructive in this regard, whether or not there is standing in a case where the spending could be authorized under either the taxing and spending clause or another clause. FLAST is a case where the where Congress has a multi-billion dollar program of paying for educational services across the country, and in which, through the spending, the national economy is implicated. So it's an action that could have been justified by the taxing and spending clause and also by the Commerce Clause. Therefore, just as the spending in FLAST, where there was taxpayer standing, likewise in this case, it doesn't matter that the spending might have been might implicate the military clauses as well as the spending clauses. There are a few points that the defendants have raised that I'd like to just very briefly respond to. We've heard about the visitors to the Jamboree. This is of no moment because under the Boy Scouts rules of who can do what at the Jamboree, the Boy Scouts get to participate in the very fun summer camp experiences like archery and biking and the like. All the visitors can do is come and watch those activities but not themselves participate in them. So the access by visitors who don't have to believe in God does not assist the Boy Scouts. As to the standing floodgates that we heard about earlier today, the doctrine of taxpayer standing that we are proposing is precisely the doctrine that was embraced by the Second Circuit 20 years ago in Katkoff and by the D.C. District Court 20 years ago in Jewish War Veterans. There has been no deluge of floodgate of litigation under the Taxing and Spending Clause, precisely because this doctrine is limited to Establishment Clause challenges, and especially in light of this Court's recent interpretation in Chao of the word incidental in FLAST, the doctrine is limited to cases where the essence of what is being challenged is a spending action, as opposed to spending that is merely peripheral to some other action.
In what sense would a reasonable observer of the Jamboree consider this to be a government endorsement of religion? I mean, it's people camping and hiking and swimming and boating and snorkeling and that sort of thing.
What the Supreme Court plurality in Texas Monthly holds and what Justice O'Connor states in her concurrence in Caldor is that non-neutral government aid to a religious group has the effect of endorsing religion in the eyes of a reasonable observer. So the reasonable observer here, who is aware of all of the relevant facts, knows that there is extraordinary aid going from the government exclusively to the Boy Scouts, and that the Boy Scouts in turn are excluding from the enjoyment of that extraordinary aid a person who does not believe in God. That must be viewed as an endorsement of religion.
That's only if it's looked at in isolation, though. I mean, the record supports the proposition that the military provides this sort of logistical support to all kinds of different organizations, the Special Olympics, the Girl Scouts, etc.
And I would just add that Van Orden against Perry also suggests that a majority of the court, as of then anyway, it's obviously a somewhat new court now, but a majority of the court, the last we heard from them, does look at a broader context.
Just to respond to, I think, two questions that have been asked now. Number one, there is no record evidence in this case whatsoever of comparable aid going to any group other
than... Why does it have to be comparable? You keep reiterating that, and there is no requirement of that.
Well, that's precisely... That is precisely the issue in Texas Monthly, for example, where a benefit is given to religious groups. A tax break for religious periodicals is not given to secular groups, and it's struck down. So when the Supreme Court sees aid being given to religious groups that is not being given in form to a secular group, it's struck down. There's language in Mitchell that says the neutrality rule means that aid must be provided on the same terms to all groups without regard to whether they are religious or non-religious. There is no case of any kind at any level which upholds the giving of aid to a religious group where there is not comparable aid being given to secular groups. And the contrary, again, in Texas Monthly and Kirosh Joel, when the court faces non-neutral aid, it's stricken.
What about the broader, more contextual approach of the more recent Supreme Court cases, Van Orden in particular?
Well, the controlling one justice opinion in Van Orden is easily distinguished from the circumstances here. Number one, the concern of Justice Breyer in his Van Orden concurrence was that there were identical Ten Commandments monoliths on courthouse lawns across our nation. Indeed, there probably are thousands. And he was concerned about the religious strife that would accompany massive numbers of these kinds of lawsuits. There's no comparison here in terms of a danger, a possible floodgates of litigation. There simply aren't cases where the government, or there aren't many cases where the government is giving extraordinary aid to a religious group. Also, Justice Breyer was noted that the impressionable youth do not frequent the Texas Capitol lawns where the display was occurring. The Jamboree is a gathering of 40,000 impressionable youth. So the situation here is easily distinguished from the situation in Van Orden. And again, the dominant factor here is non-neutral government aid to a religious group, which triggers the neutrality test as opposed to the endorsement test, which most frequently is applied to different cases like Van Orden, where the government is speaking its own religious messages.
I'm going to give Mr. Sturgill an extra minute, so you may also have an extra minute if you want to wrap up.
Sure. There's one last very narrow point that I'd like to make, which is the government has attempted to use the McCallum case to its benefit. McCallum, again, is an entirely different situation. It's a neutral virtual voucher program in which prison inmates can choose among an array of halfway houses, religious and secular. And this case is simply, again, diametrically opposed. And I do want to emphasize that in the absence of the neutrality rule that we're seeking enforcement of today, there could be a host of potential egregious government favoring of religious groups to the exclusion of secular groups. So, for example, the government could channel all of its drug rehabilitation funds to 12-step programs, which, like the Boy Scouts, are a religious group that requires religious belief and excludes non-believers. So there is a very important principle today that is very important to enforce.
Thank you very much, Mr. Schwartz.
Thank you.
Mr. Sturgill? So he can have 2 minutes for his rebuttal. Yeah.
Thank you. I'm a little surprised Mr. Schwartz brought up the McCallum case, because in that case, a religious group got a special exception from a competitive bidding process, and this court upheld that. It was a bid waiver. Judge Posner said the reason they got that had nothing to do with the fact they were religious. They got the bid waiver because they had a better program, and the government needed it, and that was fine. And I think that's what's going on here. I would also say that, you know, any group can approach the military under the statutes and regulations we've cited, including the Joint Ethics Regulation, which we haven't talked about yet, but it's cited in our brief. Any group can come in and request similar aid to what the Boy Scouts are getting. And if they provide a similar bang for the buck, they'll get it. Or the military will consider it or adjust it or somehow. None of the statutes preclude that, and the plaintiffs haven't showed on the record that anybody's ever requested it and been denied. The fact that the Boy Scout gets the aid to the Boy Scouts, the Jamboree, costs so much money reflects the scale of the event. And in fact, it reflects the amount of benefit the military's getting from the support. And one final thing. He makes an argument based on Kirios Joel that he never made anywhere in the briefs. And the response is that was a case where a state created a special school district for a religious group, and the court struck it down. But if you read that opinion, what they were concerned about is that if another group wanted similar aid and were denied it, their claim would never be reviewable by any court, because you can't review the legislature's failure to enact a statute. And you don't have that here, because if any group goes to the military and requests aid and is denied it, they'll have an APA action or a free exercise action that can be reviewed by the courts. So Kirios Joel has nothing to do with this case. My time's not run out, but if you don't have any questions, I think that's about all I have.
All right. Thank you very much. Our thanks to both counsel. We will take this case under advisement.